Welcome to another episode of Conduct Detrimental. Dan Lust, joined in the co-pilot seat this week by Mike Kravchenko. Mike, you did it. You survived 1L. How does it feel?
It feels really good, Dan. I can't lie. Hello. I'm here. I feel like a new person. You know, it's like somewhat maybe not breaking out of a shell or a cocoon just yet, but I feel like having that at least a year under my belt, much better. I feel like I've learned so much already, and I'm excited for me the next 3 years ahead. So,
you know, it's funny, like 1L is just one of those things. And those new listeners, Mike just finished his first year of law school. If you don't know what 1L means, but first year, it's a big deal. It's like you remember that feeling when you finished your first year of law school. You remember if you finished taking the bar, getting sworn in. It is a big accomplishment. So, Mike, good job. Good job surviving. There are there's always people in every, like, you know, 1L year. They're there for like the fall semester and then they like disappear. They don't even make it to the spring term. And then you'll be surprised. You'll start your 2L year and some people won't be there. They'll just be like, oh, just don't see them anywhere. They're gone. So, listen, law school is not for the faint of heart. It has been, it's definitely a tough ride, but congrats to you, my man, for surviving, thriving. I feel like you and I have been doing this for about a year now. You've chopped up all the hair. You're now going with, you probably lost about 2 pounds of hair. Is that fair?
Yeah, it's honestly, yeah, it probably is about 2 pounds. If you put it all together. Yeah, it is a lot because I had similar, if not more hair than what you've been going with, you know, what you're rocking.
And, there was a period of time where, you know, we maybe look like brothers in this or maybe like a fun uncle situation, but. Yeah, I've never had my hair that short like that you have it now, but it's all good. Okay, so congrats to you. We will, at the end, this is a very busy sports week. We got a big boxing fight. I'm going to get your pick on that at the end, Mike. We got the PGA, we got NBA playoffs, we got the Knicks, we got the Rangers. This is like the best time in the sports calendar. It's like low key, everyone gets upset when football leaves, but when football leaves, like all the other sports compete with each other for the eyeballs. So, certainly into that. Okay. Here are the topics for today. And we'll generally try to go in this order, but people can see where we're going. We have an update in the biggest case really in college sports, the House versus NCAA, the settlement talks. I think our conversation last week, I heard some feedback from some people in the know. Our nuanced conversation about what the law firm of Winston Strawn was going to do and these leaks about settlement, I think we were pretty much on the nose from the feedback I'm getting. We had a further leak in that saga. So we will discuss this $20 billion number that's being floated around. I thought we were talking about $4 billion. So now the number got to 20. So we'll talk about that update in the House settlement. The big news this week, legal, as much as it's going to be. The video game is out, the eSports video game. So Mike and I are going to discuss the impact on the college sports world on the college sports video game. And speaking of games, an interesting story that... shout out, I don't know if he's listening to this, but a friend of mine, Josh Kushnick, has been telling me about, was a big story for about a year. And credit to him, he was on top of this. Fanatics, perfect game. There's a pretty interesting NIL, I don't want to say dispute, but it's an issue of Perfect Game controlling all these kind of like high school and amateur baseball players, controlling their rights. And then now, later on, trying to sell those rights and profit off those rights in a deal with Fanatics. So, talk about that. We don't really talk about amateur sports issues. I don't say amateurs, but like high school sports issues that much. So we'll talk about Perfect Game. And then we're going to round out. We have an update in the John Gruden saga, a story that we've covered a lot in the past, but really hasn't been like, it's kind of been like stuck in molasses when they've been fighting over procedural issues. It's an arbitration issue that we will cover, a pretty big update. And we're going to start to see some movement on that case. And last but not least, a story that broke just as we were about to record, Bad Bunny. Mike, are you a music guy? Are you familiar with Bad Bunny's comings and goings?
Of course. I mean, how can you not be familiar? He's the deal, I feel like, in his genre. So I give him credit.
He has dabbled in the wrestling. He's gone to a little bit of action in WWE. Oh, yeah. But yeah, he's got an interesting lawsuit. A federal lawsuit filed in Puerto Rico against the Major League Baseball Players Association. So we will cover that. It's initial filing, so we're not gonna get too deep in the weeds, but I think worthy of a mention. Okay, Mike, we'll spin the wheel. What do you think? What do you think looks good for our first topic? We got five in general. You can go anywhere you want.
Yeah, I mean, the updates on the house is, I mean, this is a significant thing, I think, that could shake up the NCAA, I mean, platform, everything, the entire thing about the NCAA. So I think that's probably the best way to start.
Okay. Ready for the story, Mike? Ready for story time?
Oh, yeah.
We mentioned this on the show. We do it a lot in the context of litigation. But, like, it's an expression. It's not a real number. But, like, you know, lawyers will say 99.9% of cases settle. They get settled on the before depositions, before the answers filed, before summary judgment motions. There's different checkpoints. And before trial. We talked about this on a very recent episode. You and I will talk about the numbers that's being floated out there. And you and I were having a conversation offline. Like, I thought the number was 4 billion. How did it get to 20 billion, which is kind of floating around? So that's why we're here. That's why we take to the airwaves to try to control the narrative as best as we can. So I think we'll start here. The numbers that I've always seen, or I've heard, was that the damage exposure, if this thing went to trial, was in the vicinity of like, $1 billion in change back pay due to athletes based on off of unpaid NIL rights. So that could be TV revenue, it could be anything, but it's generally broadcast NIL revenue. So when you treble those damages in a class action lawsuit, that can get as high, you know, make up a number in the vicinity of $3 billion, right? It's a massive number. So we've always been working on that assumption. $3 billion is a big number. $3 billion would probably be really bad for the NCAA. Could they afford that with all the money they make, with like a, you know, near $1 billion like March Madness contract? Like, maybe they could afford $3 billion. I'm not sure how much these schools have in reserves. And then, Mike, as you pointed out, there was an article that floated around this week that it said the NCAA could face $20 billion in damages. So I'm like, okay, that's a big number. That's probably a number that the NCAA cannot survive from. Mike, you want to try to explain how we got from 3 to 20?
I mean, truly,
give it a whirl.
That's the thing, is giving it a shot. Because, obviously, we were talking about the Ross Dellinger article that he put out, you know, that documents that were obtained by Yahoo Sports saying that they could face up to $20 billion. And that's the NCAA and all of its power conferences. So, obviously, like you mentioned, what's in the reserves for a lot of these schools, and they're really talking just power conferences, which obviously is where the majority of the money comes from. But it's interesting because, yeah, it's coming out of three major cases. Obviously, it's the major antitrust cases, obviously House, Hubbard, and Carter. So I think that the mix of all of them is driving up the number there. But like you said, I'm not really sure. I've tried to go through this, and where is that $20 billion coming from? They're expected to pay 2.7, which is that around that $3 billion number in back damages over that 10-year period. So that equates to almost $300 million, you know, $277 annually. So they're paying that. Where the $20 billion, you know, 60% of the $277 million is coming from reduced distribution to schools. The remaining 40% is covered by the NCAA through other means, including a reduction in its operating expenses, which I know has been a huge topic for many, many years, is the operating expenses of the NCAA. Are they accurate? What is, you know, do they need that operating income that they claim to need? But also the big thing with this, that $20 billion number, I genuinely cannot find where this is going. It says that the steep cost of the settlement estimated at $300 million per school over 10 years. And I see that, but the number has just been driving up.
Yeah. When I was saying give it a whirl, like, I don't really think there's a real answer. $4 billion is a big number. $4 billion to $20 billion, that's a mistake on someone's part. I'm not sure how the number balloons to that high. So again, like, I guess let's talk about where this is coming from, right? So this is from Ross Dellinger's article that he posted on Tuesday, May 14th. So it says if this is talking about the NCAA, quote, if they reject a proposed settlement offer, officials from the NCAA and power conferences stand to face a catastrophic $20 billion in back damages, as well as risking a bankruptcy filing, according to documents obtained by Yahoo Sports. So you referenced that, right? Documents obtained. What are these documents? So, documents. The next line of the article says the two-page document was circulated among Power Five conferences, presidents, administrators on Tuesday. So, again, if I'm trying to read between the lines, it looks like the leak it looks like it was a document prepared by the schools or the NCAA, but that side of the equation. And it seemingly was leaked by the schools because they're the ones that prepared it and the ones that had it. And it was made for them and it was circulated amongst ACC leaders at their annual spring meeting. So, okay. So these are documents. I think it's like best case scenario, worst case scenario. So like if you're trying to settle a case and you're trying to figure out like, okay, should we settle the case or should we try the case? So no secret, the NCAA does not have a really good history in court, especially in California cases when dealing with these type of issues. So you don't like the NCAA's chances. So you're trying to figure out best case scenario, worst case scenario. Someone's going to have to explain to me the math, how we get from $4 billion to $20 billion. But I understand there's probably a larger risk if you take a case to trial. And if you go read on to Ross's article, and I have it, I retweeted it on my Twitter feed. But it's, you know, basically saying, well, if it's $4 billion, according to these proposed settlement terms, we get a couple years, I think it's 10 years to pay it off, versus $20 billion, we have to pay it in a flat fee right up front after a final judgment. So all this stuff makes sense. I just, maybe this is me getting a little jaded, but that $20 billion number seems to have been put in place by, actually, let me put it this way before I get in trouble. You would put a $20 billion number in there to make the $4 billion number look really attractive. That's all I'll say. The $20 billion number to me seems outlandish. It seems like an insane number. I'm not sure how the number would possibly get that high. We're not talking about that for revenues that like pro athletes would have made in that time frame. So that number doesn't seem right. But again, if you're trying to make the $3 billion number look really good and you're trying to force settlement, yeah. Well, if we go to trial, the risk could be $1 trillion, or we could settle for this cheap rate of $3 billion. Guys, come on, great deal.
Well, the big thing, the fact that the power conference commissioners, you know, like the Power Five commissioners, are all kind of working towards getting league administrators and presidents to authorize that settlement. I think that's what you're saying is, you know, could possibly be ringing true. You've been in those situations more than I have in terms of the negotiation side, and I'm definitely, that's an interesting little nugget to kind of have in the back of my head going forward. Like, it's playing a little bit of mind games, possibly.
I mean, there's not much more to add on it. I still am dubious of all these leaks coming out in settlement talks, which is very rare for a case of this magnitude for all these leaks to come out. So I don't know. I am not. I could be wrong, but I'm not sensing that settlement is as close as people are saying it is. It's just, okay, a $20 billion leak. That must mean we're close on settlement. I'm like, nah, not really. It doesn't really mean that at all, but I don't know. I'm happy to be wrong, but it is what it is. Okay. Mike, you want to spin the wheel again? What do you like here?
Another big thing out of the Fanatics side. We've been hearing about Fanatics, but this is a little bit different of Fanatics. You know, I know baseball, the atrocious jerseys and pants that were talked about, other deals that they've just been kind of scooping up the market as a whole. But I think that this perfect game thing is pretty significant, especially as it kind of hits home as I played baseball. I know people that have gone through perfect game and, I'm kind of interested to dive a little bit more into this with you.
Okay, so shout out to the ESPN Daily Podcast. If anyone's just a podcast person and they don't have a subscription to at The Athletic, which has another good article, shout out to, I don't want to mess up. It's Britt Giroli. I think I'm saying it right. She has an article from, I think it's also the New York Times. New York Times bought The Athletic, so whichever one you have. But a big deal, if you have it, read it. The Perfect Game Fanatics deal has agents raising concerns about amateur athletes is the title of the article. So here's the general gist. Mike, you want to explain what perfect game is in an elevator sense? What is perfect game?
Yeah, I mean, they're known for their scouting and tournaments, really. Players around the country, around the globe will just go to these tournaments. They'll host tournaments. MLB scouts will come by. Collegiate scouts will come by. And really, it's similar to, I'd say, I guess, the NFL, to explain, I guess, similar to like an NFL combine. You know, everyone comes and kind of sees these players performing. It's huge in the scouting. I mean, with baseball, they've had over 14,000 players drafted into the MLB, and 2,000 of them have played in a game. So You know, they're a significant, they're a major player in youth baseball. That is youth. I mean, to me, that's one of the top, you know, you talk about participating in things. It's the Perfect Game, you know, being at Ripken. There's a lot of Perfect Game is a significant deal in youth baseball. That's the fact that this is going on is definitely troubling. And I do understand the concern that these are very valid concerns, in my opinion.
So I think the easiest way to explain Perfect Game, it's like a showcase, right? For high school aged kids. It's, you know, so if scouts don't want to go to like all the different, I mean, I'm sure they're still going to high school games here and there and this one, but it's a showcase game to basically see how good a guy is against other high level competition. So my understanding of these kind of likeness rights that are put into these contracts, in order to play in the game, you have to assign your rights and allow Perfect Game to be able to use your autographs, your names, your image and likeness in different different capacities. One of which I know raised some concerns that, like, you also allow Perfect Game to use this in connection with sponsors, like Dick's Sporting Goods was referenced in this article. So it's basically the easiest way to explain this is that, like, these kids are signing over basically all of their rights, unfettered access to their name, image, and likeness because of their ability to play in the showcase Perfect Game game. Right.
And so, yeah. And that's the thing, too. Like, the wording is crazy. The absolute and irrevocable right to use their name, image, and likeness. It's not just, you know.
So, yeah, I mean, we could, this isn't really just like a high school baseball issue, because these guys will turn into, like, right, and potentially the Mike Trouts of the world, the Bryce Harpers of the world, some really high level athletes. So those name, image, and likeness rights that they've given away, which, Mike, to the language that you just read, like, I'm not quite sure that language is enforceable if it ever went to a court, but Perfect Game has those rights. It's very valuable. I don't know. We'll say an asset that they have under their control. They have all this IP that they're just sitting on. And, you know, I think they announced this a couple weeks ago, like, oh, we're doing a trading card deal with Fanatics. So it sounded pretty good. And it was like, wait, what IP do you have? How do you have those NIL rights? Like, so you just have all of these athletes' rights from, like, when they were in high school, and you have it irrevocably in perpetuity forever. So I think it raised some concerns, and, you know, we don't have any lawsuit now, like we'll talk about in a minute, but, like, you know, anybody going to court to try to invalidate these clauses, but it really could harm the, I don't know, marketability of those athletes. If Fanatics already has all these athletes NIL, like their signatures from when they were in high school, like, do they really need to sign separate deals? Like, you know, I represent athletes, like, we do deals with Fanatics, we do deals with different trading card companies. If Fanatics can just go around these athletes and go directly to Perfect Game, like, I think it does hurt the athletes. So shout out to The Athletic and Brit for putting a spotlight on it. But it does kind of show, like, you can sign a contract, you know, as long as the contract in theory is valid, right? Like, you weren't like a 13-year-old and there wasn't some issue with, like, signing, and you had a parent look at it or a lawyer look at it or an agent look at it. Like, if this was a really negotiated term and that term got left in the contract, I'm not quite sure how you get around it short of going to a court and trying to invalidate it. But it's pretty big, it's very illustrative, we'll say, of the power dynamic between a Perfect Game and these high school athletes. Just to get exposure, you're signing away all these rights. And now we're seeing potentially the downside of that.
Yeah, even with more access to information and, you know, I guess legal advice, it's still, you know, these are young athletes. These are families that are maybe not aware of what they're signing away. And even if they do end up getting legal advice, you know, maybe they may think it's in their best interest to just do this now. You know, this is our best chance. I think you're taking advantage of vulnerable situation. And I don't know. I just don't like it. I think the intent of Perfect Game was to be a service for the players, not just make money off of their, you know, image and, you know, sell jerseys and sell, you know, trading cards. I don't see that as the purpose of Perfect Game, but I guess we'll see moving forward. I think this is gonna end up coming out soon, because when people like Scott Boras are talking about it in the baseball field, I think that something's brewing right now.
Well, it's like in order to be famous, you have to sign away your NIL rights. Like, in order to give yourself a chance at potential, like. So my understanding is, in order to play in the Perfect Game showcase, you have to sign this. So it's like, you know, then there's this concept, which, you know, we've certainly talked about, just like, I don't know, whether it's duress or what do you want to call it, unconscionable. That's the defense to try to go against it. But I don't, you know, I'm not quite sure what you do. Like, if you've already signed these away, like, if you're Perfect Game and you've got these rights and you've been relying on these and you struck a deal with Fanatics relying on those rights, like, their intention is to enforce that. So while the terms might not be fair, sometimes you got to look at it from the brand's perspective and you say, we have these rights. Why are we not utilizing them? Just for like the greater good of athletes, we're not going to make money off this. And like, maybe it sounds pretty bad. But like you have all this really valuable IP and I'm sure they're getting investments and money coming in because of this, you know, like gold mine of IP they're sitting on. And it would be kind of foolish for them at least not to attempt to make money off it. So, we could talk about how unfair it is to the athletes, but at a certain point, like, that's why you sign lawyers. That's why you have agents. That's why your parents look at these contracts. Don't just sign something blindly. It's not like an iTunes, you know, like I agree deal. Like, you can't just like hit yes. You have to understand that that clause is in there. And if you understand it's in there, like, you don't have to play in the perfect game showcase. You could just be a stud high school pitcher and like, you don't have to play in the game. So I at least want to give some fairness to perfect game. Like, you know, the contracts are there to be read and reviewed, not just like signed blindly.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I definitely get that aspect. And it's just, to me, like, it's just as an individual, just thinking about these kids are getting younger and yet like these NIL issues are just going younger and younger and younger. When are we going to get to the point where we're in middle school and, you know, there's tournaments going on for travel based, you know, whatever it is, like in the middle school, this is high school now. And we're seeing, obviously it's been, and you know, NIL is a little interesting with high school. There is a decent amount of popular high school players, and that's really when they start taking off. But are we, you know, is this going to keep going down and down? You know, it's an interesting kind of, I think, taste of what's to come with NIL, just beyond, like you said, amateur is, you know, it's beyond college amateur. Now we're into high school and hopefully not much younger, but
let's, I know we have a brief detour, but it reminded me of something. Mike, are you at all curious as to how my 4.5-year-old girl's soccer team is doing? Are you curious at all?
Of course. Like, yeah. Did she sign any NIL?
Watts brought it up, right? No, she has not. But like, this is not relevant at all to the conversation other than I'm just thinking about amateur athletes, right? Like, listen, I have some amateur athletes on my team. Amateur is defined by everything beneath the pro rank. So I'm coaching an amateur sports team. So my daughter is very good at defense. I gotta tell you this. I think you'd appreciate this. You're a Knicks fan, right?
Of course.
We've had this conversation. She now knows one player on the Knicks. She knows Jalen Brunson, and she knows the bread man for the Rangers. She doesn't understand his name is Artemi Panarin, which is a very hard name for a 4.5-year-old, but she gets the bread man. So we're watching, I don't know what game it was, one of the game or early games in the Pacers series, and she sees Jalen Brunson take a really hard foul, and the ref blew the whistle, and she's like, why did they stop the game? And I'm like, well, somebody pushed him too hard. Okay, you follow me so far? So she understands the concept of a foul. So we're playing soccer that Saturday. So it must have been like two, three days before. And I've taught Dylan the concept of like, if you're on offense and, you know, daddy or the coach yells, come back on defense, put your head down and run back to the goal. She doesn't quite understand like if the person is not at the goal, you can just run towards the ball and kick it away. She runs all the way back and she gets into the goalie. Okay. So she's doing a little bit of a cherry pick situation. She's hanging by their goal. And I say, run, get back. And there's a girl that's, you know, probably about halfway down the field, making her way to the net, plotting, you know, this girl's, you know, not like Speedy Gonzalez, but she's making her way towards the net. And Dylan basically reaches her right before she's about to shoot. Mike, I kid you not, truck stick situation. She just knocks her out, like takes her out completely. And like the whole crowd let out an audible like, oh.
Oh, no.
And Dylan gets up and looks at me and smiles. And I'm like, okay, we're going to do a little sub situation. There's no red cards in 4-year-old soccer. It was just like the dads, you know, rush some dirt off, whatever. So I took her and I'm like, Dylan, like, and she's like, daddy, aren't you proud of me? I stopped her. And I'm like, Dylan, but you fouled her. You hit her too hard. And I'm like, she's like, yeah, but I stopped her. And I'm like, Dylan, remember what happened to Jalen Brunson? And the ref stopped it. So very valuable lesson. You can't stop anyone at all costs. You have to play within the rules of the game. So listen, we can talk about contractual issues for 16-year-olds, but we still got to educate our 4-year-old athletes that are learning about fouls. This is very, very important. So this is basically an amateur sports podcast.
Yeah, at this point, I mean, I love that though. That's amazing. You know, she's starting to learn her strengths. I like that.
Full out truck stick. So she, at that age, she even now is getting a little jealous when girls score goals. Like, and she's pretty good, but there's other girls. She's like a November birthday, so there's January birthdays. So it's like a, you know, big age difference. But even at that age, So I have, I think you'll appreciate this parenting tactic. So she, whatever, she likes to score, but there's other girls that score more goals. She gets upset. Why does this one score more goals? I had this epiphany. And I'm like, okay, Dylan, what you were going to be for the rest of the year, you were going to be appointed captain of the team. So the captain has to tell the other teammates what to do. And they listen to the coach. And the coach gives the captain advice. The captain tells the girl. So if we win games, it's because of the captain. And so now she gets it. She's the captain. Oh, nice. A lot of, I'm having a lot of fun being a coach.
Oh, I'm sure. I can see that. That's awesome.
Yeah. Very fun. Very fun. It'll be even crazier when there's like a draft and a combine and I'm making trades. Don't get me started. I'm very excited to be.
That's it.
Listen, I'm not like a crazy, like yell at the ref dad, but I am, you know, I think sports are important in everyone's life, as you can see. But yeah, I thought that was important to add here. Very important stuff, Mike.
I love that. No, that's awesome. The truck stick.
Truck stick. Full out truck stick. Full out, like, elbow in back, girl's face in the mud. And if her dad is listening to this, I'm really sorry. I did not teach her that, but I did tell her not to do that after.
Hey, maybe soccer's not the sport, but we'll see.
Maybe karate's the sport. I've been telling my wife, and if she listens to this, it's fine. We've been having this debate. Like, she right now, she does dance and gymnastics and, you know, like other traditional like girls activities, but I'm like, I kind of want her to do karate.
Get some MMA in there for sure. Karate,
really
jiu-jitsu,
beating people up and destroying people, and she's punching me very hard and karate chopping my face. I'm like, she's a born killer. She wants to karate chop people. Like, who am I to stop her? Why does she need dance and gymnastics and ballet? Let's throw some karate chops in there. Okay. I guess before I forget, shout out to Taryn, and shout out to everybody that's listening to this that went to the SLA conference last week. We were well represented. Conduct was in the house. Taryn Sharma, our own, was on a panel. Which, listen, I'm not going to name any names, but I heard Taryn stole the show. So he was on our last episode. I heard Taryn did a fantastic job. I think it was the last panel of the entire weekend. So shout out to Taryn, making us look good over here. Over at Conduct HQ. And speaking of making us look good, shout out to Themis Bar Review, top bar prep company in the entire galaxy. Mike, are you familiar with Themis?
Oh, how could I not be by now?
Well, have you like got signed up for Themis, like the early discount?
No, not yet. Let me do this. You guys hear me doing it right now?
CD Themis, all lowercase 500. CD Themis 500. Hannah Valenti, one of our OGs over here, recently just announced that she passed the bar, took Themis. Listen, we love Themis. Themis is the best. So Themis makes us look good. And, you know, we try to give people the shine. Okay, let's do this one quick, and then let's close up with Gruden and Bad Bunny. Mike, the EA Sports video game, it is all over my feed. Can you give us what the latest update is? We can try to close this chapter as best as we can. I have some thoughts on it, but I know you feel like you're closer to the video game generation than I am. I play like pixel golf on my phone. I play a lot of like phone games, but I'm no longer a console guy at this point in my life.
Yeah, no, I'm excited for this. And yeah, speaking of trucking and hit sticks, you know, the truck EA stick. Sports College Football 25 was announced today, the date actually, July 19th, it'll be coming. There's multiple different editions, but obviously how we got here is more important on the legal side. Because the last game, the fact that it's coming out now, the big controversy is that the last game was released in 2013, because the production was halted due to the O'Bannon NCAA lawsuit. We were just talking about NIL. I mean, obviously this is why the NCAA game stopped. Because they just were not compensating athletes.
When's the release date? What do we got?
July 19th, the game will be out. July 16th, you can get that early access. You know, if you want to spend $100+ on the MVP and deluxe editions, you know, a lot of people are very excited for this game. I get it. We have a thing in my apartment, my girlfriend and I, we have to get a new system because, you know, we have the old ones. We're at the Xbox and the PS4. So I'm going to get a PS5 and get the new game. But yeah, now they're releasing these games once more, finally giving players compensation for it. NCAA Football 14 was the last one. So now that NIL is back since 2021, this has been a conversation to bring the game back. This is a beloved game. It's just the road to glory. Honestly, there's nothing like NCAA football, I think, but it'll be interesting to see, I think, the reaction of fans, especially there's already been a little bit of reaction on the people that were gracing the front cover.
Of
the title.
Well, people were wondering how much money they were getting paid. I don't think that's been disclosed, but we've talked about it on prior shows that every athlete that opted into the game got like $500 in that territory. But these cover athletes, Quinn Ewers, you know, people can look at the cover and see who's on there. I don't know what those numbers are. I don't know what it's worth just to have have 20 cover athletes. Like there used to be some, I don't know if it was necessarily public, but if you were the cover athlete, like Reggie Bush or this one or that one or whoever, or Denard Robinson, who's the last cover before this one, you were one guy. So there was clearly a conscious decision to spread the wealth amongst a number of athletes. We haven't talked about necessarily recently, but there's a handful of athletes that chose not to take that 500 and opt into the game. Arch Manning being one of them. And now people are saying, okay, so is Arch Manning not in the game? And now we go back to the same scenario that we had, I don't know, 10 years ago. I don't know what features are going to be in the game. I imagine you can create a player, you can edit players. I imagine you could do that. And if they have a backup quarterback on Texas, Quinn Ewers is the starter, they'll have a backup, whoever. I imagine the NCAA would have been smart enough in EA Sports to not have a player that resembled Arch Manning in terms of his height and his weight and his throwing.
That's the interesting. I'm curious about that aspect, because obviously beforehand they would create basically the entire teams, but it would be like, for example, it would be quarterback.
Right. But it's the image and the likeness. It's just not the name.
Right. So, right. It'd be quarterback number 16, Texas quarterback number 16, that's what it would do in the past. So I'm curious now with NIL, can they do that? Or are they going to tiptoe the line?
They definitely cannot do that. They can't use their image and likeness without providing a profit. But my question, which I think is probably ripe for a law school fact pattern at some point, it's like, as long as you have the feature in the game that's create a player, edit player, or whatever, and I can just and everything about this player is customizable, whoever, like randomly generated backup quarterback that's not Quinn Ewers on that team. I can just edit it to be Arch Manning. Like if I can edit the attributes and make the height and weight and change, I can basically make Arch Manning. So that's why we talked about this a year ago, but it's nice that the assets are opting in for $500. But if I wanted to get them in the game, there's all these roster mods you could download online anyway, like with or without the money. So the money is a nice gesture. I don't necessarily think the NCAA needed to do that. They could have came up with all generic players and then some psycho on the internet could have edited the whole roster and we could have downloaded it. So people are like, oh, can we not play with Arch Manning in the game? Like wink, wink, nod, nod. Like I'm sure you'll be able to edit the rosters and put them in if you want. Just like I used to do when I was a psycho and I used to edit, Philip Rivers into the game and Ben Roethlisberger and Eli.
I had on Madden 06. I have my entire family as the starting, for the New York Jets. So starting lineup.
That's pretty sweet. I used to be a 6'10" defensive end. I used to rack up sacks with me and Julius Peppers on each side of the line.
That's awesome.
Destroying people. It's not really. That's it. This is not revenue sharing, but it's an attempt to allow players to make revenue from non-traditional pieces of pie for athletes. So, we've pierced. We're not at revenue sharing yet, but we've pierced the bubble for video games, and we'll see what happens with television next. But listen, we've done the impossible. 10 years ago, the NCAA said they would go bankrupt if they ever did this model, and still standing. That's interesting. That's odd. I thought you said you'd go out of business. Not quite. But maybe with the $20 billion judgment, that would seem to put them out of business, unless that was a total lie and a number they made up. Unless it was just a total lie. Okay, Mike, we got two more on my list. We got Gruden arbitration and the Bad Bunny MLBPA case. Which one do you like? You pick. Well,
let's keep it football, and then we'll finish off with the MLBPA and Bad Bunny.
Okay, Mike, you're up. Use your 1L skills. Pretend you're being cold called. Pretend there was a reading on the Gruden case. What is the latest, Mr. Krevchenko, with the John Gruden matter?
Yeah, so many people know about the John Gruden case, especially the longtime listeners who've been covering it a lot. It was
longtime listeners, first time callers.
Yeah, it was filed in November of 2021, and it accused the NFL and Roger Goodell specifically of leaking his private emails, which contained very offensive things and were directly. He basically said that they were doing it to harm his reputation and force him out of the Las Vegas Raiders. So. This now he obviously has been combating that for the last few years, and The three-judge panel of Nevada Supreme Court ruled in favor of the NFL for John Gruden, so they stated that he must actually resolve his claims through the league's arbitration process, regardless of the fact that he's not an NFL employee anymore. And that was a huge thing that the lower court even said. They denied the NFL's motion to compel arbitration because he wasn't an employee anymore. But now that they, the Nevada Supreme Court has ruled in favor of the NFL, they've overturned that. So now he has to go through the NFL's arbitration process, which is controlled by the NFL. So it'll be interesting to see kind of how that goes with his, considering that they are his former employer and he's had a very long history with the NFL. So kind of curious how this is going to really be resolved. If so, obviously it'll be resolved privately, which eliminates obviously the public of the public trial aspect that so many people wanted out of this. But, you know, I think it's a setback for Gruden, obviously, and it's going to be more in the NFL's favor. So I'm interested to hear your thoughts, especially with the fact that Gruden's family is still pretty involved with the NFL, and if that'll have any kind of little thing in the back of their minds, or you know, if this thing is just going to end here and kind of move on with the grievances.
So I'll give you my thoughts, I guess a little bit of background for the new listeners or people that are not familiar. Gruden's firing related to this email leak. So this I'll do very quickly, and I don't know, for any of my current, future, or former students, we talk about the Gruden case at least in some capacity every year. We actually had a fun thing this year. I did like mock trial situations. So two people defended, were on the Gruden side, like advocating for Gruden for the case to go to arbitration or to not go to arbitration. I had the NFL lawyers arguing the other side. So like I've heard this case play out amongst my students. So like at a really high level, Gruden gets fired because of emails he sent while an ESPN broadcaster. So he sent like a series of, you know, the full spectrum of offensive comments, you know, misogynistic comments, racist comments, you name it. Gruden did it. You know, I don't want to say anything bad, but it's all publicly out there so people can look up what I'm saying. And, you know, there was a series of I have no idea, but it appeared to be a coordinated leak. Like one was to the New York Times, another one was to this publication, and there were different emails that was like a drip drip. So like, I think one email came out and it looked like Gruden was going to continue coaching for the team. And then like another publication and another email. So whoever was leaking these emails seemed to want Gruden to lose his job because they came out, I think, after a couple of days. I think they more emails came out after we coached that particular weekend. So whoever it was seemed to be doing this to get him to lose his job. And Gruden ends up, you know, either gets fired or he you know, comes to some terms with the Raiders on the way out. Mark Davis, the son. And, you know, like at the time he had $100 million 10-year contract, the richest head coaching contract in football. So after he's out, he basically makes this argument. He said, like, how my emails got out during the course, and these emails were, I'm sure most people know this, but Gruden was emailing employees with the then Washington Redskins. And at the same time these emails were coming out, the Washington Redskins, now the Washington Commanders, were being investigated by the NFL for workplace harassment and toxic culture and all this other stuff. So people in the NFL were looking at Washington emails, and those were the emails that happened to get leaked. So like, I don't know, it doesn't take any rocket science. It seemed like the leak of Gruden's emails related to the NFL being in possession of Washington's emails from the, you know, overlying Snyder investigation. So Gruden goes, okay, I'm suing the NFL. You guys had those emails because of this Washington investigation. Who else could have leaked it? You guys just got the emails. They were never leaked for the 10 years before while I was an ESPN broadcaster until I came back to work for, you know, the Oakland or Vegas Raiders. Like, they weren't leaked at any point beforehand. And like the minute you get the emails of the NFL, they get leaked all of a sudden. Like, okay, who could have leaked the emails? You guys did. So, you know, that's the case. It's essentially a tortious interference or with a contract case, like that the NFL's alleged leaking of the emails caused Gruden to lose his job. Mike, are you with me so far? Did I explain that okay, solidly?
No, I think that was good. That gave a good, deeper understanding of kind of my overview.
So kind. So, okay, now that's the dispute. To get into the actual arbitration issue, why did Gruden get fired? That's the $100 million question. Did Gruden get fired because of an act that occurred while he was a non-NFL employee, while he was working for ESPN as a broadcaster, because that doesn't seem to be covered by his arbitration clause that said all disputes under this contract are subject to mandatory arbitration, because he wasn't an NFL employee. That contract was not in effect, in a force, didn't exist yet, because he was still working for ESPN. It was an email that was sent 10 years prior, number of emails. So that was Gruden's argument. The NFL's argument is that it said when you signed this contract with the Raiders, you agreed that all disputes with the NFL would be subject to arbitration. And Gruden said, well, I'm being fired for something that occurred before I signed this contract. The NFL said, well, no, you are suing because you lost your job, which relates to this contract. So it was kind of an interesting battle of like chicken and the egg, and you know, when the actual breach, I don't know, not breach, but when the actual incident occurred that resulted in this dispute. So Gruden won the first battle. This case, while it was at the trial court level, the NFL twice tried to move this case to arbitration. The judge said no. Mike, okay, here's where you're at. The update, okay? I know you know the judge's name. I know you looked at this. What's the decision at the appellate level?
Yeah, Justice Kaddish.
Kaddish. Yes. Shout out Judge Kaddish.
Saying that the
– Could it be Kaddish? Could it be Kaddish?
It could be Kaddish. It probably is, to be completely honest. C-A.
Let's go with Kaddish. C-A. I know a Kaddish with a K. This is Kaddish with a C. I think you're probably right. It's Kaddish, like cat, like C-A-T.
True. Well.
Let's go with Kaddish.
That's what we're going with. And yeah. Justice Christina Pickering. So want to add her in.
Shout there. Out to Pickering.
Yes,
shout
she did. They did form the majority opinion, which was two, actually, that the arbitration clause in the NFL Constitution applies.
What's the other judge's name? You get the two. What's the one that decided against them? You better have this, Mike. This is on the final.
Yep. Justice Linda Marie Bell.
Whoa.
So she dissented in the arbitration, saying the arbitration clause should not extend beyond Gruden's employment period, which is interesting, you know, an interesting.
I think she's right. Yeah. I thought Gruden was right the first time. It's like a split. You and I are both MMA and combat sports guys. This is a split decision. This is not like a unanimous decision. It's not like a 30-27. This is like a 29-28 card, 29-28. And then it's like 28-29, or maybe I saw a fight last weekend. Are you a big UFC guy? Have we talked about this?
Decent. I don't watch every weekend, but
there was a fight last weekend that was like a split decision. It was, let's just pretend you and I are fighting. It was 30-27 for me, said one judge. And the other two judges had it 29-28 for you. So I'm like, one judge basically scored all rounds for this one. And I'm like, so anyway, but to applying sports to applying a MMA UFC judges to real judges, this is a split decision. Like I actually think the dissenting judge got it right. Like the reason for his termination, those bad things that he said, he wasn't employed by a team, and that's why he was being fired. He didn't do anything new. Those are old emails that were dated 10 years ago. How could this arbitration clause, which wasn't in effect at the time, how could that have any bearing here? It just doesn't – it seems to violate the spirit of this contract.
Yeah, I don't get it. The fact that they're saying it's binding through after employment ends is interesting too, because what if he, you know, going and working for a different –
binding after employment ends?
That's their decision. What if
Roger Goodell – look, so John Gruden doesn't work for the NFL anymore, right? He's on the street. What if Roger Goodell walks up to John Gruden in the street and just punches him right between the eyes, right in the face, straight down the pipe, right in the face? Does this arbitration cover everything?
I would imagine
all disputes, even after termination of the contract. Is that really what the interpretation is? Is that really what they said?
That's what Nevada. Yeah, in any of the articles that I've been reading on the Nevada's decision, that's
Kaddish and Pickering. I'm not sure I agree with that, judges, respectfully.
Yeah, that's been the kind of their. That's the message that they're putting out with their decision. Also, in my opinion, beyond any other outside opinions, how can you not think that if that's what they're going to decide, that means it's binding beyond his employment, and then that's I really truly don't understand that, because like you said, in the grand scheme, in normal society, does this happen, or is it because it's the NFL? And I don't know.
We have a conduct detrimental alert. This is from the Front Office Sports article. Our friend AJ Perez tweeted this out. Quote, when Gruden entered into his contract with the Raiders, the richest coaching contract in NFL history, he agreed to two broad arbitration provisions that cover all disputes arising out of his employment agreement or involving conduct detrimental to the league. So ding, ding, ding. Obviously, we said the word. But yeah, two broad arbitration provisions. I just find it odd. Yeah, they could be really broad. They could apply to all, you know, acts of conduct detrimental to the league or arising out of employment. But this did not arise. This was not an action that occurred during his employment. So yes, it's conduct detrimental to the league, but it's conduct that occurred prior to this contract being entered. So, you know, we weren't in the room. I don't have all the transcripts of all the oral arguments, but this to me does not seem like a correct decision. And now this fun case, which I was really excited for, it's going to be decided behind closed walls of arbitration. Unless I did see a nugget that Gruden was debating taking this to the Nevada State Supreme Court, which would be pretty cool. We'll see. It's possible. Possible it gets overturned again.
Gruden's a fighter, so I could see that this might not be the end.
Yeah. Let's see. Okay. Let's close with this. Bad Bunny. Mike, for the uninformed, can you tell people who Bad Bunny is? I think you said he's the top guy in his genre. Give a little background on Bad Bunny before I tie in the baseball.
Yeah, Bad Bunny, if you're not aware, I don't know, you may be a newborn or someone born in the 1930s, because Bad Bunny is everywhere, literally. He's in every part of entertainment. He's a rapper.
Born in the 1930s or a newborn? Come on. Everybody else knows who Bad Bunny is?
Even my father is so out of touch. He knows who Bad Bunny is. And it's just the thing with Bad Bunny, he's a musician, rapper, entertainer, obviously a sports agent, or, you know, so he covers all bases in entertainment. WrestleMania, is he undefeated at WrestleMania, actually?
Yeah, but I think he's only been on one match.
Hey,
I mean, listen, undefeated. Yeah, but like, Mike, do you know who Bluey is?
Bluey is one of the greatest shows ever. I'm just letting you know.
Well, listen, there's probably some stuff that I know that you don't know about. Like, do you know who Peppa Pig is?
Of course. I'm
going to go show for show here. By the way, Bluey is a great show.
No, seriously. Bluey is actually one of the best shows ever.
So I've been rewatching Rugrats. Speaking of bunnies and toys, I've been rewatching Rugrats, which I was like my show, OG show as a kid. And my girls really like Rugrats, but I can now watch it from the parents' perspective. I'm like, the show's actually really good. Like, clearly the writing was done for parents and for kids. There's two different ways to watch the show. Bluey is really the only, maybe there's other shows. Someone can listen to this and tell me I'm missing one. Bluey, I think, is, and I watch a lot of kid shows. I think the only show that like is written for parents as well. Like there's like Peppa Pig is a kid show. Like, I don't know. I can name any of these stupid shows like Paw Patrol and I don't know, Daniel Tiger. Like they're all.
See, that's one I don't know. That's the first one.
You don't know Daniel Tiger?
No. Very well aware of the other ones. Bing Bong Zoo and Peppa Pig. Come on.
Bing Bong Zoo.
You've never seen that episode?
What is that joke? Oh, Bing Bong Zoo?
They go to the,
is
that from, should know this from being a Knicks fan too, you know? Peppa Pig and the Knicks. Bing Bong.
I know what Bing Bong is. You said Bing Bong Zoo.
Yeah, they go to the
is
zoo.
Is that what they call MSG after Knicks win?
No, that it should be.
Yeah, it should be. Anyway, shout out to Bluey. But okay, so Bad Bunny, he's really big recording artist. He's world known. He's a big deal.
Yeah, he's one of the, I mean, highest streaming artists in the entire world. Apple, Spotify, everything.
So it's certainly not the first time we've seen, you know, musicians cross over into sports. He tries to start a baseball agency. You can go back to Master P, who I think had, memory serves, like Ricky Williams back in the day, or you know, Roc Nation getting into sports. You know, there's certainly a history and a crossover of music coinciding with sports. So Bad Bunny tries to create a sports agency called Remus Sports. Okay. He has now filed what we referred to as a federal lawsuit. Then he's accused Major League Baseball Players Association of, quote, placing a death penalty, close quote, on the agency through a discriminatory bias and predetermined investigation into Remus's business practices. So that was filed earlier today. So essentially, the MLBPA on April 10th, so it's about 30 days ago, just to give and change, decertified. So it took away the certifications of agents William Arroyo and prevented Remus executives Noah Assad and Jonathan Miranda from seeking certification. And then they also threatened a different agent, Michael Velasquez, with decertification, and they quit the company. So this 27-page complaint filed in the district court in Puerto Rico, they're seeking an injunction and a temporary restraining order against the penalties levied by the MLBPA against Remus, which were, quote, designed to put Remus Sports permanently out of business. Okay, so blah, 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 blah. The suit alleges that MLBPA had exceeded the scope of its statutory authority under the National Labor Relations Act and blah, 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 blah. Okay. You know, we'll see how Major League Baseball, the MLBPA, responds to this. But they're basically, they're arguing, like, you're decertifying all of our agents because essentially, you know, claiming that benefits were unlawfully or provided to athletes in order to sign them. Mike, if I told you that Remus Sports was the only agency to give improper benefits to baseball players, would that surprise you? The only agency in the history of mankind to do that.
That would be incredibly surprising.
That would be incredibly surprising. I've certainly heard of this happening before, you know, not to name any names, but like that's what they're being accused of. And Remus Sports saying you're basically giving us a death penalty for an act that is occurring across sports, not necessarily just baseball. And you've exceeded the scope of what you were allowed to do. So I'm not quite sure how successful this lawsuit's going to be, but I do agree in theory, like, this seems a little excessive. It seems like, you know, unless you're going to tell me that the actual acts here were like so egregious, but at the end of the day, like we're talking about athletes getting paid money to switch agencies. Like, you know, it's not a crime. Like, no one's dying from this. Like, you know, yeah, it's all is fair and love is war. There's lawsuits and civil lawsuits, but if you take away an agency's ability to sign anybody, right, as opposed to just levying fines and whatnot, like, you know, there certainly is liability, but I'm not, you know, we'll see what the MLBPA's response is. I'm sure they're going to move to dismiss and all that fun stuff. But, you know, I think an interesting lawsuit, especially MLBPA turning away a guy like Bad Bunny at a time where baseball would probably benefit from a relationship with Bad Bunny and having him tied to the sport in some way. So I find the whole thing somewhat odd that the MLBPA is just kind of going so hard at Remus. You would think this would be an agency that they'd want to protect in some sense, but certainly the opposite. They're going scorched earth here.
Yeah, I think the celebrity agencies have not been as welcomed, I feel, at least by a lot of these major pro leagues, that they've taken extra care and extra focus on that because this is a lot. I mean, it's a lot of money. Besides really the NFL getting into a deal with Roc Nation recently, especially with the halftime shows, I don't off the top of my head know many celebrity owned or celebrity backed agencies that have gotten as much support as that. So I'm not too surprised, but like you said, I'm on the side of Bad Bunny in the sense of, I mean, like this has never happened before to come after them specifically. But you know, the MLB seems to find another way to go after something that people like. So we'll see.
I'll give you this note here from ESPN's article. This is from the complaint that was just filed. About a year before the completion of the MLBPA's investigation, its decision about Remus Sports, quote, entertainment attorneys Oswaldo Rossi, John Baldivia, and Jimmy Barnes sought union certification. In a letter from an MLBPA lawyer, the complaint said, these lawyers were told that, quote, their certifications will be conditioned on your agreement not to work for or with Remus Sports or represent Remus Sports' client. And according to the complaint, an unprecedented condition imposed on them that is not part of the MLBPA regulations. So that's kind of interesting. It's like if you wanted to be, like as an agent, if you wanted to get certificate, if you're an attorney and you wanted to have, wear an agent hat over here and be an attorney over here, you would not be allowed to be an agent if in your private practice you work with Remus Sports' clients. That does seem unfair. Certainly not the one to say if that's unprecedented or not. I'm not going to take the complaint at truth there. But that does seem kind of odd. Like if I was trying to get certified with some type of an entity to be a half baseball agent, and if my private practice, I was working with another agency, maybe conflict of interest issues aside, that seems like a very weird, odd condition. Again, like this complaint doesn't address the substance of the allegations and the discipline against them. So we could be sitting here and be like, okay, Remus is really toxic. Everyone related to Remus is pretty toxic. So, you know, maybe we could be sitting here and have singing a very different tune. But I'm very curious where this lawsuit goes. So, I don't know. I think people that are into Bad Bunny, that are into sports agency, take a look at the stock at Mike's. Mike, are you going to be keeping tabs on us or tabs on this for us?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and we'll be getting out some short form as well. Some quick updates for everyone.
What are your socials, Mike? Give people your socials.
Yeah, absolutely. I would love for everyone and appreciate everyone to check out. Yeah, absolutely. My YouTube is the big one. That's the one.
Say it here, but you should put it in the show notes
too. Yeah, absolutely. So just my name, Mike Kravchenko, but at M Kravchenko, KRAVCHENKO. You can find me on YouTube. That's really where my biggest content goes and where I want to push everything. Also on Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram. Just my name.
You're big on LinkedIn. I see you drop it in the comments. You know, It's like a big thing with like emojis. You're like a big emoji guy on LinkedIn.
I do. I'm trying to find my way on LinkedIn. You know, you got to find your lane, and that's kind of where I'm at right now. Is finding my way. But YouTube is my bread and butter. Video is my bread and butter.
Shout out to Mike's YouTube account. Okay, so let's close here. We got about 5 minutes in the tank. You have any thoughts on what do you want to take? You want to take your PGA bet, Mike, or your boxing bet? Those are the two big activities. We can talk about Knicks. I know you like the Knicks to win. I know you like the Rangers to win. So yeah. We won't worry about that.
Yeah, of course. Cool. I mean,
like Fury or
I do. Usyk? I do like Fury. I do. I would. I'm gonna go Fury and then PGA.
Oh yeah, that's all I wanted. I wanted one from you. Oh, okay. I got thoughts on both.
All right.
Okay. So Fury. Listen, I did a lot of research. Okay. So depending on when people are listening to this, I could be either really right or really wrong. I don't think you can pick either fighter in this. I think you got to go with props. Fury's a wild card because he looked really bad against Ngannou. But he's also a beast. And he's also like, I think he's got a 7-inch reach advantage against Usyk, whatever you want to call him. Usyk is a former cruiserweight champ who's now obviously went up to heavyweight. So like you have Fury that could knock him out. Usyk, my buddy thinks he's going to win on points. Fury could knock him out. So you could do that. But if Usyk is really the smarter fighter, he's going to get himself out of dangerous situations and he's not going to allow himself to be knocked down by Fury. So my bet, Mike, and I could be wrong. This is kind of not a fun thing to root for, but I think it's smart money. Listen, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. Neither fighter to be knocked down. -125. So you're really just rooting for people to like have good chins and take a punch or two. Okay. And it'll also give you a full fight. Because if no one's getting knocked down, this thing is it's going places. So you could take the over rounds. I don't like that. I like no knockdown. So every punch you're sweating. You're sweating that every punch could be a knockdown. So got some bang for our bucks. I recommend that one. And I gave this out to my various channels. I did a lot of research on the PGA. Shout out to John Nucci. He's our golf law correspondent. He pops on every so often. I was looking at Rory. I had a hard look at Rory. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go with Rory. Top 10. -120. I laid some a little bit of juice. Rory's looking pretty good today. And John Nucci, he gave me his four picks. I'll say him here just so he gets if anybody wins. John is the man. He said Rory, Brooks, Wyndham, Clark, and Bryson. So John had done a lot of research. But once I had Rory and John Nucci gave me Rory, I'm like, Rory's a good bet this weekend. So yeah, Rory top 10. And neither fighter to get knocked down in the big heavyweight boxing match, which is a very weird start time, 6 p.m. on Saturday.
Yeah, that's very weird. That's a very early start time for a fight. Very early. And I like that Rory pick. I've been liking Rory a lot more. I don't know, this last month, I think coming into the tour here or the championship, we need that. We need Rory to just win a major here.
Speaking of legal cases, I think Rory filed for divorce. Mm-hmm. Is that the news?
That is correct.
Maybe we'll cover it. But Rory filed for divorce. He just won the PGA event last weekend. So if like maybe this was weighing on him very heavily, he won the PGA. He won the last PGA event, the Wells Fargo. I think it was a Wells Fargo Invitational. So let's see. Looks pretty good today. Okay, I think that'll about do it here. Right? Anything else? We missed anything, Mike? Anything important?
Nah, we always got them.
We're good.
We got them.
We're good. Okay. Go Knicks. Go Rangers. And if you are a listener and you root for the Indiana Pacers, I am not rooting for your team. And if you root for the Carolina Hurricanes, we have some Carolina people that I know listen to the show. It's not your year. Knicks and Rangers. That's it. 2024. Cool? You like that? You like that sign off, Mike? I feel like you like that.
I love it.
Okay. We appreciate everybody each and every week, and that'll do it for us here at Conduct Detrimental. And yeah, we'll see you next time on another lovely episode of your favorite sports law show, Conduct Detrimental.